a really short but a really significant passage in one of the Gospels. We're going to look at Matthew chapter 4, verses 18 to 22. So if you'd like to open up to that, then please do. If not, it's going to come up on the screen as well. And I've got the New Living Translation, the NLT, on the screen. So if you have a different version, that's fine. Just read along. So this is what it says. One day, as Jesus was walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, also called Peter, and Andrew. They were throwing a net into the water, for they fished for a living. Jesus called out to them, "Come, follow me, and I will show you how to fish for people." And they left their nets at once and followed him. A little farther up the shore, he saw two other brothers, James and John, sitting in a boat with their father Zebedee, repairing their nets, and he called them to come too. They immediately followed him, leaving the boat and their father behind. I wonder, when you read that or hear that, what is the first thing that you kind of think? I know that for myself, I read that and I think, wow, would I do that? Would I do that, just immediately follow Jesus, leaving my life behind? That's quite an ask, isn't it? And something so different to what many of us in the culture that we live in here are asked to ever do, for leaving everything behind. It's such a dramatic thing. So I've been looking into the context of this. What would it really have meant for these men? Come, follow me. So let's start off looking at Simon, who Jesus then went on to call Peter. So I'm going to call him Peter today. Peter was a fisherman. We know that. All these men were fishermen. And fishing was a fairly dangerous thing because they had to go out on the sea. It wasn't a particularly safe job. But it was also quite a steady income. So Peter was part of this family business. And it would have been fairly good. Business would be good. There would always be people that wanted to eat, and they weren't about to run out of fish. So they weren't going to be running out of money anytime soon. But it wasn't the easiest job, and it would have been a little bit of toil. But probably they still would have been getting by and maybe had a little bit of extra money from time to time. So why would someone with such a kind of normal job be so ready to leave everything to follow this man who he'd just met? Well, Peter was a Jewish boy, wasn't he? And Jewish boys at the time would have been, had gone through certain processes. So Jewish boys by the age of 10 would have memorized the Torah. That was the expectation. And the Torah is the first five books of the Bible. So by the age of 10, they would have memorized that much. Then at that point, most kids would stop studying. And they would go off and become an apprentice in their family business. It would only be the best that would get to carry on studying. So the best continue to learn. And actually, by the age of 14 or 15, they would be expected to know the entire Old Testament by heart, to know it. Now, I was a maths teacher for a few years. And for maths GCSE, you have to learn about 10 formulae off by heart. It was a struggle to get 16-year-olds to learn those 10 formulae. I don't know, how did these people, 14, 15-year-olds, know the entire Old Testament? And what does that say of us and how much we know of it? So then, after that, the best of the best that had gone through their up to 10 years learning the Torah, that had gone up to 15 years learning the Old Testament, the best of the best could apply to be a rabbi's disciple. And the aim of being a disciple of a rabbi wasn't just to know what the rabbi knew. By that point, the boys had already memorized so much. It was to become like the rabbi, to become more like your rabbi. And as they applied, the rabbis would grill them. They would grill them on all the different interpretations that the rabbi had of certain scriptures compared to other rabbis. And if you were good enough, if you'd gone through all of this process, and if the rabbi thought that him grilling you, you'd answered things correctly, then he would say to you, "Come, follow me." After all of those years, after all of that process, Andrew and Peter were fishermen. So if there's one thing that we know about them, it's that they weren't good enough to the other rabbis. We don't know whether they dropped out of that process at the age of 10 after the Torah, or at the age of 15 after learning the Old Testament. But we do know that a rabbi hadn't chosen them, because they were fishermen. That's what they were doing. So they probably heard about Jesus, because he'd been causing quite a stir around the area, right? They would have heard of what he was saying. And actually, in Luke's account of this story, Jesus asks Peter if he can preach in the boat first, before this conversation happens. But this rabbi that they'd maybe heard some bits about, and rabbis, by the way, tended to start their ministry at the age of 30, the age that Jesus was at this time. This rabbi comes up to them and says, "Come, follow me." So not only is this a kind of crazy invitation to go and follow someone, it's also Jesus, this new leader in town, saying, "You are good enough. You may be a fisherman, but I'm saying to you, come, follow me. Come, follow me." Jesus chose them. He believed in them. He said, "You can do this. You can be like me. Come, learn to be like me." So this isn't just some random man walking up to them and them dropping everything. This is like if you're singing in the shower and kind of Will I Am or some big music producer comes up to you and says, "Come, I'm going to sign you." This is like you kicking a football about in the park and a football manager that I don't have a clue what his name is comes and says, "Come and play. Come and play for me." This is a massive, massive vote of confidence. It's a massive privilege to come and follow this man. So they say yes, because of course you would. And if a Jewish boy said yes to following a rabbi, then the three things they would try and do is firstly to follow the rabbi, then to copy the rabbi, and then to carry the rabbi's passion. And Peter and Andrew said yes. So we're going to look at those three things a bit. What did it look like? They followed Jesus. We know that this is the start of a journey for this group of men, don't we? We know that they spent the next 3 years together. And over this time, they started to see what Jesus was really like. And I spoke to people in my community in the Royal Docks about how do you think people at the time would have described Jesus? Aside from saying he's the Son of God, what things do you think they would have said? Yeah, Jesus did that. And this is what we came up with. I think it's on the next slide. Says Jesus knew his purpose, didn't he? The first thing he says at the start of his ministry, "I've come to declare the kingdom of God. I've come to preach the kingdom of God." He knew what his purpose was. We really noticed that Jesus spent time with people, and actually often with all the wrong people. How many accounts of stories with Jesus are meals, or passages like the woman at the well, where he has a really deep conversation with a woman that most people wouldn't have even gone near? He spent time with people. He was kind, but he was also very frank. He also told people what they needed to hear. And he wasn't afraid to challenge the status quo. Think of Jesus turning over the tables in the temple. He wasn't afraid to say, "This is the way to live." Another thing we noticed is how he often prayed alone. I wonder how that seemed to the disciples. How many passages end with or start with, "Jesus then went and prayed alone"? Think of when they're before Jesus walking on water. It's because Jesus has been spending some time praying alone and he wanted to catch up with the disciples. And clearly Jesus spent a lot of time praying for miracles. They spent 3 years following this man, seeing him doing those things. In that time, they also would have started to copy. to copy Jesus. And we see this again in the walking on water miracle, don't we? Where Jesus is walking on water and Peter gets the opportunity to copy him, to try it for himself, to experience that. We also see times when Peter gets it completely wrong. We see it even after 3 years, right at the end of this amazing time he's had with Jesus. That's when Peter decides that actually an acceptable thing to do is chop off a soldier's ear. He still thinks after 3 years that he can do that. He's still doing things wrong, even after 3 years of following. But he is trying to copy. And after Jesus' death and resurrection, and after Jesus ascends into heaven, then Pentecost comes. And at Pentecost, I think that's where we really see Peter carrying Jesus' passion, that third thing. Because at that point, Peter goes from the man who is always the one putting his foot in it, doesn't he? To a man that truly does become the rock on which the church is built. A man that preaches, telling people the entire history of their people, ending with the significance of Jesus' death and resurrection and his life. And on that day, 3,000 people are baptized. And he goes on in his ministry throughout Acts, we see him. Peter especially, he followed Jesus. We see he copied Jesus. We see he carried Jesus' passion. And what I think is also amazing here is at the start, at this kind of short conversation that we see in Matthew, they have no idea what they are signing up for, do they? They have no idea. They didn't know that it was going to involve 3 years of really getting to know the other disciples and Jesus, traveling together. They didn't know the different boundaries that Jesus was going to ask them to cross. They didn't realize that after 3 years, they would then see their leader crucified. I'm sure they didn't realize that later on they would be crucified themselves. I'm sure Peter had no idea that there would be a huge church in Rome named after him. And I'm sure Andrew had no idea that he would become the saint of many countries, of Scotland, of Greece, of Russia. But they just had to say yes at the start. And I think there's a few things that we can learn from this story for ourselves. Firstly, I think Jesus invites us to journey with him. Jesus thinks that we are good enough. He chooses us. He says to each of us in this room, come, follow me. He doesn't just say, come, believe in me either. He says, come, follow me. Journey with me. I wonder how often do we say no to God because we don't feel like we can do things. And actually, we need to remember it's not about that because he says that we can. Who are we to say that we can't do things when God is telling us that we can? And these men hadn't passed all the tests. Sometimes we can turn Christianity into more of an academic thing. How much do we know about certain subjects? And it's not about how much we know about theological subjects. It's about how much do we know Jesus and how much do we follow in him? How much do we sometimes make it about knowing more rather than living better? Jesus calls us to live better. And it's an ongoing thing, not just at the start of our lives or at the start of our relationship with Jesus, but a daily decision, sometimes a decision we have to make every minute, isn't it? To follow Jesus, to continue. So Jesus invites us to journey with him. He also invites us to become like him. Jesus invites us to become like him. I wondered, that list of things that was on the screen a minute ago that were things that people said about Jesus, they're going to come up again in a moment. How much would people say those things about you as a disciple of Jesus? how much would others be able to say, yeah, I know them, they do these things? Jesus invites us to learn our purpose. He invites us to spend time with people, to be kind but to be frank, to tell people when things aren't right, to challenge the status quo when things that are happening aren't right as well. Jesus invites us to spend time alone with him, to really pray alone with him, and to pray for miracles, to believe that he really can change lives, to believe that he really can move. And as we do that, as we journey with Jesus, as we learn to be like Jesus, Jesus invites us to be our true selves. Our true selves. He says to Peter, doesn't he? Come, follow me, and I will help you fish for people. Or more of us will know the well-known translation, to become fishers of men. To take what you already do, who you already are, and to use that gift in a way that glorifies God. To take all of yourself and to be your true self that God has made you to be. I wonder how Jesus has made a difference in your life. Again, I asked my community in the Royal Docks this question, and here are some of the things that people said to me. Some people said, he's actually completely changed my life direction. I was headed one way, now I'm headed a completely different way. And for some of us, that's the story. For others of us, it's not quite that dramatic. For some of us, we're doing exactly the same thing, but we're choosing to do it in a different way. Some of us have just started to become less selfish, to remember that actually the world doesn't revolve around me, to remember that Jesus asks me to worship him first, and to see the bigger picture. And some of us said, actually, that's kind of the one thing, if Jesus has made a difference in my life, it's been reminded me that there is this bigger picture, and I'm just a part of it. But I wonder, what does it mean for you? What does it mean for each of us in this room to be our true selves that Jesus has called us to be? Our version of fishing for men. And there's a few examples I just wanted to talk about of people that I really believe have done this with their calling. And there's a few pictures on the next slide. And this first guy up here is Brian Stevenson. You might have recently heard of the film that came out called Just Mercy. Absolutely fantastic film, and there's a brilliant book he wrote a few years ago on the same topic, and I'd recommend watching it or reading the book if you're able to. But Brian is a lawyer, and he set up something called the Equal Justice Initiative in America, and he works with people, mainly people on death row or under 18s that have been sentenced to life in prison, which he believes is wrong, to subject someone to die in prison for something they did before they were even an adult. And particularly those from poor communities. And Brian has done amazing things. And he does a TED talk, and if you watch it, it's quite incredible and inspirational. And it was the longest standing ovation ever for these TED talks, which are they're kind of 20-minute talks about issues that affect people across the world. But Brian started off just as somebody that loved being in college. So he went to college and he realised at the end of his degree that he was going to actually have to get a real job. And we know those people, don't we? And he didn't want to. So he thought, how can I put this off? How can I stay in college a little bit longer? So he found out that actually to do most things post, most kind of postgraduate studies, you had to have some prior qualification that linked to it. And he didn't really have anything useful. So he ended up finding out that he could do law without needing to have any kind of particular prerequisite. So he got onto this law course, and for him, it was just so he could stay in college a little bit longer. It was really significant, him being in college, because he was the first person in his family to do it. but he also just kind of liked it. As he studied law, though, he started to get really frustrated because he'd grown up in a poor, rural black community in America, and he was spending time just talking about corporate law and things that he felt were so far apart from the real issues that he needed dealing with. And over the course of his time there, he did one placement in particular on one module that really changed his understanding. And he got to see someone on death row, and he talks about the first time that he met somebody on death row and realizing that actually they were exactly the same age and they got on really well. And he's now been able to get hundreds of people off death row and work with hundreds of people that were incarcerated either wrongly or for sentences that were completely unfair. And he says this, he says, "For me, faith had to be connected to works. You have to do something with what you believe in some way that reflects and expresses your belief. Faith is connected to struggle. That is, while we are in this condition, we are called to build the kingdom of God. We can't celebrate it and talk about it and then protect our own comfort environment." And he was offered really high-paid jobs at big corporate law firms. And in response to that question, he says, "Yeah, I had options that maybe some people don't get. But if you do something that you're not engaged by just for money, it's not dramatically different from someone who doesn't have many options." This is a man who really understood what he was passionate about. He's still alive and doing it today. And he used his gift. He realized that he would be a good lawyer. He had no idea what he was getting into when he started it. But once he realized that, he realized that he could use that to do good. He didn't change his job. He just changed how he did it. The second picture is of singer-songwriter Lauren Daigle, who has had some big hits in the past few years. And she wrote the song "You Say." And I'm just going to read out the chorus of what "You Say" says. It says, "You say I am loved when I can't feel a thing. You say I am strong when I think I am weak. You say I am held when I am falling short. When I don't belong, oh, you say that I am yours. And I believe what you say of me. I believe." Those are the kind of words that we could easily find ourselves singing on a Sunday morning, aren't they, as worship? And she's a Christian singer-songwriter who has gone into kind of mainstream, getting number ones in mainstream song music charts so that other people can hear this message outside of the church. And she talks about how when she wrote this song, she had people writing to her, telling her that they were about to commit suicide, and hearing the words of this song made them stop because they realized that they were worth something. Lauren's a singer, but she used that gift of singing to serve God and help others. The third picture is of a woman called Sybil Phoenix. And Sybil was the first black British woman to be given an MBE. She came to the UK from Guyana in 1956. And she was welcomed over, well, that's what she thought. She was told she would be welcome here, and when she got here, she found a very different story. She found a story that actually was quite a racist environment. She found not a lot of opportunity to make money. She moved to Lewisham, and in Lewisham, she fostered over 100 children. She set up a supported housing project for young single mothers, particularly homeless mothers. And she set up a youth club in Lewisham, which was burnt down by the English Defence League. And when that youth centre was burnt down, she said, "My name is Phoenix, and I will build a new youth centre from the ashes of this club, so help me God." And 4 years later, in 1981, Prince Charles then came and opened that new youth club, and it's still there today. Sybil just had a gift for loving people. And she talks about how she fostered children of all different skin colours, which was not something that was looked kindly upon by people at the time. And how she treated them all the same. And this was a woman that used her gift of loving people to change those hundreds of lives of children that she fostered and came to her youth club. And I think these three people all found their way of being fishers of men, all found their way of serving God, following Jesus, finding who Jesus truly intended them to be. But I wonder about us. What is it that Jesus is asking us to be? Who is Jesus asking us to be? I saw on your slide before the service, it said that this church is about telling and being good news in the community. Isn't that amazing? Telling and being good news in the community. Where's your community where you're doing that? Maybe it's a workplace. Maybe it's a social group that you're at during the week. Maybe it's where you live, in your house or with your neighbours. How are you following Jesus more closely in those places? So I've got three questions that I'd like to ask you. My first one is this: are you journeying with Jesus? Maybe you said yes to following Jesus a long time ago, maybe you said it recently, maybe you never said it. But are you continuing to journey with Jesus now so that it's not just a one-time thing that you said, but so he is truly shaping your life? Are you becoming more like Jesus? All those things that we talked about. Are you becoming more like that man Jesus that we spoke about than you were before? You're never going to be Jesus, of course. But are you more like Jesus than you were a year ago? And are you becoming more like the best version of you? The best person that God made you to be? And as I ask those questions, I want to encourage you and give you good news. We will mess up, but Jesus still chooses us. And Jesus still laid down his life for us. Even though we'd done all of that, even though Peter chopped Jesus' ear off after 3 years of following, it didn't change Jesus' mind. It was still worth it. And we're going to respond today by taking communion, a reminder that Jesus continues to say to us to eat his bread of life. And I'm going to ask Tokes and Liz to come up and lead us in some prayer.
Is there a crackle? Crackle.